Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129. I'm Carrie Weber, executive editor at America, and I'm joined today by Father Matt Malone and Zach Davis, and we are talking a little bit about the Advent season.
This time of year, we're also mindful of the people among us who don't have a home and may not have as much hope. Eve Tushnet, one of our contributing writers, has written about that for America.
Eve Tushnet is, as you mentioned, one of our contributing writers, and she has an article called What It's Like Going to Church When You're Homeless, which can be found at americamagazine.org. Eve, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome. I hope you can hear me. Can you let me know if you can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Oh, super.
Good. Thank you. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what sort of prompted you to look into the experience of people who are both looking for a faith community, but also looking for a home.
Yeah, so it was kind of two things. One is the story that I tell at the beginning of the piece of just seeing someone at my own church, the church I was going to a few years back, who went up for communion and then had to leave very quickly right after communion was finished. And I was sort of wondering why that was, and then saw him immediately after Mass asking people for money outside the church. So he had left so that he wouldn't miss anyone, essentially, so that he could sort of get out in time. And that made me kind of reflect and realize that in all the times that I'd heard homilies that mentioned the needy or homeless people, it had never been in terms of we, the members of the church, ourselves actually not having stable housing. It was always like, here's what we can do for them.
Right.
And so I did want to give kind of a perspective of the church, you know, the church, the we of the church does include a lot of people who do not have stable housing or who are living on the street. I guess that was probably the biggest thing that really spurred it.
Yeah, and it's really remarkable. I mean, as soon as I saw your piece, I said, oh, well, of course, that's obvious. There are people who are homeless who are part of our community, who go to church. But as you say, it was regrettably not something that I had really thought a lot about, because it is always presented as that's something that the church needs to be mindful of and do something about, but it's kind of happening out there affecting other people who don't necessarily belong to our community, but we need to be mindful of anyway. And you really connected the dots for us there in going out and meeting folks and asking them about their experience. What did you learn when you talked to them?
Yeah, there were a lot of things. One was really just how varied people's experiences were. And you can sort of see that in the piece. There's a couple of people who have been living on the streets for a long time. And then there are other people who have very brief periods of living in their car or shuffling around, like couch surfing, so that they would stay with friends when they could, but they never knew if they would be able to still be there in a week. So a lot of different forms of instability that often had, I think, surprisingly similar kind of emotional and spiritual effects on people. I think another thing that surprised me that I did not think to ask about, but that came up consistently again and again when I talked to people, was stories of helping others, which again sort of gets back to what I was hoping to do, because so much of the what you hear in church is about how church people can help homeless people. But a lot of the stories that the people that I talked to would give me included stories of them helping and giving and finding ways to serve and to perform acts of charity even while they were living on the streets or were in very bad situations. And then I guess the third thing that someone else had to point out, I didn't really notice this myself, was how much the Eucharist comes up in the Catholic stories. I think in part because in the Eucharist you have such an intense and personal relationship with God that's in some way distinct from any difficulties you may be having in your relationships with other people. Mm. There's a kind of direct one-to-one, almost privacy and intimacy in your relationship with Jesus in the Eucharist that I think is part of why it did come up quite a bit when I was talking to Catholics, although there's a lot of people, or some of the people interviewed for the story are not Catholic.
Right.
Eve, you were talking a bit about the ways in which different people you spoke to sort of the different experiences they had with being without a home, with being homeless. Can you talk a little bit about the stories that some of the folks described to you? Because I think our listeners would find it interesting to hear some of the paths that some of the folks took to being in these situations. Because as you read, you realize it's not all that far off from what any one of us might encounter if we encountered a couple hardships that we you know, that were financial or emotional or mental health wise, and that it, you know, I think we're a little closer to the situations that they describe than what a lot of us might think.
Yeah, no, I think that's really true. There's a woman toward the end of the piece who describes basically going through a divorce, which had obvious huge financial repercussions for her and also really shattered her sort of emotionally and psychologically. She's pretty blunt that she was not mentally together when she was going through all of that, and that that made it very hard for her to kind of get back on her feet. She bounced around from person to person. She would stay with people for a little while, and then they would sort of tell her that she had to find somewhere else to be. And that's one. A lot of people's there's another guy, Greg, who I quote a couple times in the piece, who had broken up with his girlfriend and had to leave their apartment very quickly. And was going through, again, a lot of some mental health stuff of his own, and ended up living in his storage space. He had certain things that lots of people don't have. He had the storage space. He had his car. He had a gym membership, so he had a place that he could shower. But even so, and he was also, I think, working that whole time. I'm pretty sure, I don't remember for certain, he was certainly working at least through part of it. And even with all those things, you know, the story that he tells is pretty harrowing, of living in an unheated storage space or in his car through the polar vortex, which I don't know if you all remember, like freezing cold a few years ago. And beyond sort of the physical hardship, I think everybody talked about the ways in which not knowing where you were going to stay and not knowing how you were going to meet really basic needs like staying clean, having nice clothes that you could wear in public, really sort of damaged their sense of self and made them really aware of how others perceive them in a very painful way.
Which would make it all that much more important to find, hopefully, a spiritual community where you could understand your sense of self in the context of God and unconditional love. But a lot of people had trouble finding that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. There's a lot of different, again, variation on how people experienced their church communities. I think everyone at least felt sort of wary. And for others, you know, one woman talks about trying to go to different churches to receive services or just to find out what they were all about and being basically turned away. She ended up, the way that she came back to faith was that she and her husband were sleeping on the steps of a Catholic church, a Dominican church, and some of the priests came out to speak to them, and they thought they were going to call the cops, and because that was sort of what they were used to, that when people find out that you're sleeping somewhere, they'll call the police on you or at least tell you to scram. And she was surprised by the fact that instead the priest really sat with them, talked with them, asked them how things had gotten to this bad point, and really began to reach out and help them. Other people, you know, would talk about concealing what they were going through from people at church, not wanting anybody to know that they were homeless. Greg talks about that because he was actually working at his church during some of this period and didn't tell anyone there. So I think there's a lot of kind of, in a way, it's like you feel, I think, more scrutinized at church, even though we hope that it would be a place where people would feel that the scrutiny was less painful, but I'm not sure it always works out that way.
Eve, you mentioned in the piece that not everybody who's experiencing homelessness or will be seeking a deep relationship with God, and they won't be, you know, as upbeat or community-minded or sane or even sober as, you know, we might want or expect them to be. But the church's unwillingness to accept people, you know, sort of as they are, has deeper implications for how we are church. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I did want to kind of flag the fact that the people who are willing to pour out their life story for me, a stranger, are going to be people who are unusually trusting and unusually, you know, coherent in speech. And that was not true of everyone I tried to interview. But there, if I hope that we see if there's a place. First of all, I hope that we see that if there's a place for the more coherent and trusting homeless people, there needs to also be a place for the ones who are less trusting and less coherent. And then two, many people have gone through periods in their lives where they were the less coherent or less trusting or less sober people. I remember one of the people I interviewed talked a little bit about other people he knew who were not able to stay sober or stay off of drugs. And I was like, oh, that's right. I remember when I was still drinking, when I would go to church drunk, I had a stable house. You know, I had a home to go home to. But those are, again, sort of the people actually in the pews. I don't know. I'm not sure where I'm going with this. Just that I think all of us at some point have had some of those, or not all, many of us, experiences that make people genuinely harder to deal with.
Yeah.
But that we needed the church in those times.
Well, I think that that's absolutely true. And the point that you made in the article that I really liked, you know, you said you've never heard a homily in which people who were homeless appeared as anything other than the object of others' aid. And that is generally how we tend to think about them, which is to say that we don't really think of them as people who exist in three dimensions and who also have something to offer and you know, have life histories and have people who that they have care about and so forth. And I thought that was a very powerful thought. It also reminded me during the season of Advent of whenever I'm thinking about this issue, I tend to think of John the Baptist, you know, because he was, you know, there he is kind of running around out there dressed in these crazy clothes and, you know, he's kind of ill-kempt and he's going around just, you know, saying stuff in the middle of the, you know, in the middle of the square, as it were. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, you never know who is going to be the agent of grace, right? And, you know, that person that, you know, doesn't look like the rest of the group and is, you know, shouting outside the church or shouting in the middle of the subway platform and doesn't seem to be making much sense might actually be saying something extremely important, mm-hmm. right?
Right. And Eve, you've had experiences of your own personally where you found that someone was looking out for you who you didn't expect, right?
Yeah. Yes. This was not a story that made it into the article, but because it's not really about church. It's more just my own personal stuff. But there was a woman I knew who was homeless when I was still living downtown, who, when I was still drinking, I would be like running around late at night, real drunk, and she would actually follow me. I didn't find this out until much later, but she would follow me to make sure that no one harmed me or that I didn't come to harm in any way. And there was actually one night where she basically sort of like kind of scared off. I don't think she actually did anything. She just sort of made it clear to another woman who she thought was going to rob me that I had someone looking out for me. And really took care of me in a way that I was not even aware of. And one of the guys that I interviewed for the America piece told a somewhat similar story of spending a lot of time, the church that he goes to is near a bunch of nightclubs. And so when he would be there late at night, he would sometimes see men taking very drunk women into the alleys behind the nightclubs. And he would just go and stand basically at the mouth of the alley to make sure these guys knew that someone was watching. and that this would generally lead them to put the woman in a taxi or, you know, at least get out of there. And so that again, that was a pretty visceral, that reminded me of this thing with the homeless woman who had looked after me, and it was a pretty visceral reminder of how much I had in fact needed charity, kindness, protection from someone who was herself pretty unprotected by society.
Right, and what better image of Christ is that than someone mm-hmm. looking out for us even when we aren't even aware and even when we mm-hmm. possibly don't even feel like we deserve it?
Mm-hmm. Reminded me a lot of, I'm a Loyola Chicago grad, and one of the ministries they have there is called Lobber Ministries, which is named after St. Joseph Lobber, where students gather on a weeknight and they will go in downtown Chicago and distribute you know, hats, gloves, hot dogs, sandwiches to people experiencing homelessness. And one of the things I learned when I was a freshman was just the community that they develop amongst other people experiencing homelessness. They really look out for each other and care for each other. If someone's not where they were the day before, they ask around and see what's going on. And that was such a lesson to me, that they were more caring towards their neighbors than I have ever been.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one of the guys, even while I was interviewing him, we did a phone interview, and so I could actually hear him going around, and other people would check in with him, and he would talk to them, and it was clear that he was, you know, a member of a community, and in a, from what he told me, kind of a pillar of the community in terms of looking out for people.
Yeah, and that is absolutely essential, because what you and Eve were talking about, because you know, the folks that I've known who have been homeless or have lived on the streets, the thing that I've always heard them say is that the most difficult thing about it often is the invisibility that you experience in the middle of a crowd, right? And, you know, even everybody has a different relationship with how they handle charity and money and when people approach them on the street and so forth. But he said, you know, there's no reason why you can't acknowledge that someone exists, why you can't smile or say good morning or say have a nice day, right? And it's also, but that kind of simple hospitality, which at its root is the mere acknowledgement that you were interacting with another human being, also needs to infuse our understanding as a church, as a community. You think?
Yeah, one guy really crystallized it, but it was something that several people said variations of. One guy, Charles Purcell, put it in these words, I desperately want to be seen, and I desperately want not to be seen. Yeah. And that was something that a lot of people said in different words.
Yeah, and it's that kind of deep ambivalence, and so there's a loneliness, but also a kind of shame that is mm-hmm. working in tension there. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the piece is called What I can't see this the way it's printed. What It's Like Going to Church When You're Homeless by Eve Tushnet. Eve, thanks so much for being with us today, and thank you for this article, and thank you for your contributions to America.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, it reminds me actually of the story that we let off with. Well, actually, the second story we talked about, which was, you know, finding God, finding faith in a pediatric oncology unit. You know, you never know, right? I mean, ours is a God of surprises. That's what this season of Advent is about. We have a faith that everything has within it the potential of calling forth from us a deeper response to God and to one another. That's what we celebrate in this season. And we find grace in the most unexpected places. Love happens in the most unexpected places. I just want to note that it was some news breaking today about President Trump and the announcement that he and the State Department were going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And we have great piece from the 13th Editor-in-Chief, Father Drew Christensen, at AmericaMagazine.org. It's called Trump's Decision on Jerusalem is a Middle East Deal Breaker. So I guess I kind of just spoiled the where Father Christensen takes it.
Yeah.
But I don't know of a person who is a better, more thoughtful expert on these issues than Father Christensen, who's given his whole life to the study of this region and of faith and international affairs. So people should really check that out.
Indeed.
And they can check out all of the other content that we've talked about this week at americamagazine.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And to subscribe to America, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Zach Davis and Carrie Weber, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.